sessions. I know some of it may be a bit beyond or taxing, but your spirit will have received a whole load more than necessarily you think, and it will get released when you need it, as you need it. And again, as I say, if something doesn't resonate, just park it. But pursue that which God really stirs you to pursue. You know, pursuit is the evidence of desire. And if we really desire sonship, if you really desire to come into the fullness of who we are in God, then we need to pursue it. It won't chase after us. You know, let's draw near to God and he draws near to us. So after my dark cloud experience that I shared this morning, you know, I became untethered from just having to be on earth or in heaven so that I could live in both realms and eventually live in multidimensional realms at the same time, because we're in him and he's everywhere. So we have access to be everywhere that we need to be. Doesn't mean we have access to be everywhere we want to be, but where we need to be. Because God gives us, seek first the kingdom, and he will give us all the things we need, not necessarily all the things that we think we need or might want. So then things he gives us are in line with our destiny to help us fulfill it. So my soul and spirit became unified. I became so connected with heaven and earth. And that is where I've lived from 2012, February the 20th, till now, in learning how to live in the realms of heaven, engage in the realms of heaven. But what do you do there? You know, that's the key. It's like, we can go to heaven. And is the point, there's something to do. You know, so my spirit could stay there, and I became then a channel for heaven to touch earth through me and around me. And you know, what I've learned to do is just completely gone beyond what I could have possibly imagined thinking I could do back in 2012. Because 2012, I knew no one anywhere other than a few friends. I had no contacts around the world. What I'm doing now and mentoring people around the world, and you know, through the Creating God program, everything, I wasn't even a thought in my mind until I started to get closer to the Father, and the Father started unveiling my destiny to me, so that he started to write it on my heart, because I had asked him to. Every day I'd go to the Ark of the presence of God, and at those times I wasn't engaging in the four faces or anything like that. I was just engaging, what's my mandate for today? And of course, what's in the Ark is a pot of manna and tablets of stone and Aaron's rod that budded. And obviously what's on in heaven was reflected on earth and is now reflected back in heaven, because Jesus went back in there. So in essence, when I started to do that, Jesus said to his disciples, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. I have food that you know not of. And he was talking about heavenly food that enabled him to do earthly things. So I used to go and I want to eat that manna. I want to know your will today. Then I'm like, opening my heart, Lord, that you can write on the tablets of my heart. Because he doesn't write on tablets of stone any longer. He writes on the tablets of our heart. So I want him to write things there for this day, which my destiny will connect to, and it will motivate me and draw me. And then I can be drawn over here and not go over there. Because that's what it does. It helps you avoid things that you shouldn't be into and going into the things that you should. So the whole expanding the kingdom as a gateway of heaven into the earth became possible, because we're supposed to be joined to the Lord and one spirit with him. So it says, Corinthians 2:17, it says that, you know, and that's about intimacy of being one. And then from that position of oneness, being like, who's making this decision? Me? The Spirit, my Spirit, the Holy Spirit. Sometimes it just, I just do stuff. But I know it's part of what I should be doing, and I don't have to overanalyze it. So dual realms living is really about multi-dimensional living, being able to access the physical realms. And there's a physical realm here, but there's also a spiritual realm here. There's angels here. There's a spiritual realm around us all the time that we may not be aware of unless you learn to tune into it. And there's all sorts of multiple realms of heaven, and then there's a realm on the inside of us where God dwells in us. So all these things become accessible. Heaven, the atmosphere, under the earth, beyond those things, dimensional things, eternity outside of time and space, all sorts of other things. And the reason is God wants his kingdom, his will, on earth as it is in heaven. And we're called to be involved in the as it is. And I think that's awesome that he's called us to be co-heirs. Yeah, he could have done it all himself. He could have done it all through angels if he wanted to. But he's calling us sons. He made us to be sons, to be involved in the family business. And that's really important, that we're part of it. You know, we're not bystanders, we're not observers. It doesn't just all happen to us. It's not fate. It's not all agreed and then it's automatic. Yes, there are things on our destiny, our good works prepared for us before the foundation of the world, all those things, but we have to cooperate. We have to engage. And the more intimate we are, the easier it is to engage. So we're seated in heavenly places. We're accessing those blessings to bring them to the earth. So the more heavenly preparation takes place, the easier it is for those spiritual blessings to manifest on the earth. You know, I spent years calling for God to pour out heaven on earth, you know, to come down. You know, he never did. Sometimes there were manifestations of his presence and they're awesome, but it was never what I was really looking for, because I was looking for him to do it and I could just sit back and say, oh, this is amazing. Which is a little bit what revival type things are like. You know, I've been involved in probably 8 or 9 what you'd call moves of the Spirit in different ways. 5 or 6 of them at home, several of them around the world that I've gone and engaged in. And they were awesome times, but it always felt like this isn't quite it. It's like I'm going to observe and I can experience and the wonderful experiences, but it didn't feel like this is what it was really supposed to be. It was almost like this is trying to get us somewhere. It's like all the stuff in Toronto in the 90s and things like that was like, you know, Father looking to say, hey, I'm here. There's more for you. Come back into the Father heart of God. Discover more. Not this is it. You know, and some people are still doing the same thing 20, 30 years later. Stuck there. You know, and you do have God do amazing things. You know, there was a church in America I was reading about where on a Sunday morning the power of God came and split the plastic lectern right through the middle. And God started to move. He showed his power. And people were like, whoa, that lectern is now in a glass case. You know, they remember the days. They never moved on. You know, we really need to sort of move on into the things that God's really wanting us to go into. So the more active you are in heaven, the more easy it is heaven to manifest through you. Now Jesus said this to Nicodemus, John 3:13. No one hath gone up into heaven except he who has come out of heaven, who came down to heaven, the Son of Man who is in heaven. And this is from the Young's Literal Translation. That's why it didn't read that well, because it's just literally the words it says. So basically, you know, you won't find that in some English translations, because they left that bit out, because it didn't really fit. So, yeah, Jesus came out of heaven, but it didn't say is in heaven or his home is in heaven now. And what he was saying is, if you're going to do the things I do, you need to be able to live in dual realms like I do. So Jesus says, I want you to do all the works that I do and greater, and we try and do it our own way rather than learning how he did it. He had a constant communion with the Father. That's what enables us to do all the things that we're called to do when we're constantly in communion, fellowship, intimacy, joined to the Lord. And this is what quantum entanglement's about. It's a scientific principle. Particles can be in two places at the same time and instantly connected. So Jesus said, John 5:19, you know, I only do the things I see the Father doing. I can't do anything else because I'm so submitted, because I'm gentle in heart, which is that I know who I am and my authority, yet it's totally submitted to only do what the Father's doing. So he was humble in heart because he knew who he was, but he didn't have to demonstrate it, prove it to people, even when they were trying to get him to. He knew his identity and flowed from that identity with the Father. So quantum entanglement is a physical phenomena which occurs when pairs of group particles are generated or interact in a way that the quantum state of each particle cannot be described independently of the state of the others. So in other words, they're joined. They function. And when they've tested this, they can have a particle which is 2 million miles away or 1 billion miles away, and actually you engage one and instantly the other one reacts. So whatever I'm doing in heaven should have an instant effect on earth. My soul, if it's in cooperation with that, resonates in agreement and then begins to manifest what's going on in heaven. So let's move on. So soul and spirit in heaven and on earth, but instantly connected, flowing also in time and space. And there's all sorts of opportunities for us to be translated from one place to another. You know, how did Philip, who was talking to the Ethiopian eunuch, find himself miles away in Azotus instantly? He didn't travel at the speed of light, you know, because actually traveling at the speed of light is impossible in this dimension, the way we think about it. You know, Star Trek didn't travel at the speed of light. They traveled at warp speed, which was bending space, so that you had two things which were billions of light years away, and you bent the space so they were closer. I don't know if you knew that, but they're working on warp engines today. Scientific community are looking to develop warp engines. You know, they're looking to develop photon engines. They're looking, all that stuff in that science fiction, it really isn't fiction anymore for most of it. You know, they are teleporting things. You know, not humans. I don't think I would be volunteering for the first one of those. I don't know if you remember the film with the fly that got into the transmutation chamber. Don't fancy that one. Quite happy the way I am. But these things are beginning to take place from a technology perspective. Technology always copies what's spiritual and what's available spiritually. We have organic ways, spiritual ways of doing what they're now developing technology to do. So Philip wasn't transported in a transporter beam and transported somewhere else. He went into the spiritual realm and came out of the spiritual realm somewhere else. It's actually called quantum tunneling. And, you know, they fire electrons at a LED screen. No electron particle should go through a screen. Photons, nothing can get through it. It's LED. But they put a measurement system on the other side, and they actually measured things on the other side. So they knew it was impossible that they went through the screen. So how did it get to the other side? So what they discovered was that particles are in and out of a different realm all the time. That's drawing energy from another realm to keep this realm in functioning. And so at some period, some of those particles were in another realm and they materialized on the other side when they came back into this realm, which is what quantum tunneling is about. You actually don't tunnel through something. You go into a realm and come out on the other side. You know, now these things are just scientific fact now. It might sound a bit odd and weird, but actually these are the things that if we understand how the universe works as our creator created it and the laws of the universe, the laws of the spiritual realm, the laws of the natural realm, we can also learn to do some of those things. To control the vibrational frequency of matter, of energy to come into matter. Jesus turned water into wine. Now, I wouldn't have turned water into wine if I was him, because I don't like wine. You know, my wife loves it. Yeah, so, you know, I don't like it. Never liked it. So I wouldn't do it. But I might turn something into something else. You know? What would you like to turn it into? Ooh, let's turn this water into gold, perhaps. Or diamonds. Or other things which would be quite useful. You know, so if he did that, which is just transmutation, he changed the vibrational frequency of that matter, changed its atomic structure to vibrate at a different frequency and have a different atomic number and mass, that it became something else. Now, I look at my wife, she says, I don't need to know that. Can I just do it? Well, I said, well, have a go. How'd you get on? Well, I couldn't do it. Well, maybe you need to learn how to do it then. Well, we have fun like that with each other. Yeah, when I first engaged this stuff and I came out of my fast and I was like sharing with her, she was just like, whoa, too much, overload. I can't cope with all you saying me. A little bit at a time, please. So I fed her a little bit of time. So she said, well, how do you do some of these things? Well, I said, well, this is what I did. I practiced this. No, I don't think I want to do it that way. So I said, well, that's okay. That's fine. You don't have to do it that way. Try and find a way to do it yourself. So then a few months later, I said, well, how are you doing? Well, not so well. I said, well, maybe just practice this to start with until you find your own way. Do I have to? Well, I don't know why you're being so stubborn. Well, I'm not you. Well, you don't have to be me. Just learn. And eventually, she ate a bit of humble pie and actually learned. And now she can do this just as well as I can. But you have to kick-start it somewhere. And a forerunner just opens the door of opportunity and says, hey, this is possible. Hey, you can do this, which is what I do. I'm not expecting you to be me. There's only one of me. Praise God, there's only one of me. But the reality is there's only one of you either. And you all can learn how to do these things as sons of God, because you're all sons of God. You all have authority as sons of God to have authority in creation. And that means the laws that establish creation and how creation holds together. So we can be involved in those things. Now, ultimately, we want to bring an agreement between heaven and earth. So we can be a gateway of heaven into the earth. So we can be heaven-forming. You know, people talk about terraforming. And there's a sense of terraforming as in, okay, we want a planet to be habitable or whatever. But actually, I want heaven to be on earth. So it's heaven-forming rather than terraforming. Because I actually want to see the garden of Eden manifested on earth and fill the earth so that heaven and earth... Because the point is, we should be bringing heaven to earth. You know, so it's about what is heaven like? How do we get that on earth? So when we live under an open heaven on earth and we're living under the laws of heaven on earth, we're living as an embassy of heaven on earth. And then we're ambassadors of that embassy. And all of you are ambassadors of Christ. It's your title. Everyone has that call to be an ambassador of Christ, to represent heaven on the earth, to represent heaven's government on the earth, and to operate from the authority of heaven on the earth. By being in heaven and actually being in two places at once, ultimately, that's the ideal. Now, we have to learn. You know, I don't expect everyone just to be able to do that. It took me quite a long time, but we did have a go at severing soul and spirit and reintegrating it so that you could be free to do that. So, and then earlier on, we went and engaged on the mountain and on the throne in heaven so you could do it. So we're going to do a little bit of practicing in a minute of, well, you're there and you're here. So how does that work? So, yeah, you go, you can think about there, you can think about here, you think about there, you can think about here. Now think about here while you're there and think about there while you're here. Because that will get you used to doing these things. It's all a little bit like, you know, Ian Clayton stepping in, stepping out. That was just to get us activated. You know, it wasn't that was what we had to do for the rest of our lives. It was this is to get you going. And when you learn how to do that, then you can learn a bit more. And I'll learn a bit more and I'll learn a bit more. So, yeah, the ability to shift dimensions consciously is key. So we have to practice. Hebrews 5:14 says that we learn to discern things because we practice training our senses to discern. So our senses become trained to discern different things by practice. If you want to be good at anything, practice. Some people are really naturally talented at certain things, at certain sports, but if they don't put in the effort and practice, there will be people much less talented who will beat them. Because it does take discipline to get the best out of your talent. You know, I mean, I can play all sorts of ball sports. I'm a natural racket sport player, ball sport player, golf, anything with a bat, ball, or something that hit a ball, I can do. I can pick it up and I can play it. But I would never be able to beat someone who's been practicing and playing for a long time, no matter how good I was, until I practiced enough to be good at that particular thing well. Now, I used to do. I mean, golf, I used to play golf when I was a teenager, and, you know, I got to a single finger handicap, and I practiced a lot, and I was good at it. Now, I played golf the other day for the first time in about 3 years. I wasn't so good at it. I still beat the other two I was playing, but I wasn't good enough. I was thinking, oh, I wish I could do this like I used to. So I had to adapt my game to compensate for my lack of certain capacity of doing things. But if I practiced a little bit more, I would learn, I would get it back. Because you don't forget it. You just have to practice. So in all these things, practice. Practice, 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 and you will get better. Step in, step out, engage in, engage on the thrones. Do all the little activations that we've done in these times. Don't let them be, well, we did them then, wasn't that a nice conference? Pursue it so it's your lifestyle. Learn how to do it. You can do everything that I do and more. If you are as disciplined as I am. If you're not, you won't. I am really disciplined. When I want something, I pursue it. You know, when I wanted to be baptized in the Spirit, I pursued it until I got baptized in the Spirit. 3 years it took me, but I didn't give up. I kept going and kept going. You know, when I wanted to go in 2 years, I was trying to get back into heaven from 2008 to 2010. Every day. Did everything I knew what to do and tried everything to get back in there because I'd had a taste of it and I wanted more. Because that's my inheritance and I knew it was my inheritance, but I couldn't do it. But I kept going at it. And that was preparing me because God saw the desire of my heart. So when I had this prophetic word that said, God has seen the desire of your heart, I'm like, yippee. I know what he's seen then. And in this prophetic word, it said, the thing that you're longing for is near. God has opened up a door and a portal for you to ascend where you've been. And I thought, yes. No, then it was like, well, how do I do it? I didn't know. But I made myself available. God showed me and then he taught me how to live that way. And now I live that way. It's my lifestyle. I don't have to practice anymore unless I have to learn something new. So if I go to somewhere new in heaven, I go there a few times so I'm familiar with it. Then I can think about it and I'm there. So all the things I was sharing to you, all the different courts, all the realms, the tabernacle and the temple, you know, and the throne room and the fiery river and the fire stones, all those amazing places, the court of the upright and the man in white linen, the court of angels, all those things I practice going to learn where they were so they become part of me. Now I just think and I'm there. The throne of grace, the tree of life, Father's garden, the waterfalls of heaven, the river of life, to me that is now an instant connection. Because A, my spirit is already in that realm, and all I have to do is shift where I'm thinking to be there. You know, and anyone can learn how to do this. It's not that difficult, but it does require practice and discipline. And I think we've been sold short by the whole charismatic community in you can get this easily. You don't really have to work at this. And I'm not saying you earn it, but you discipline to practice so you can do things better. So what are all the realms? Well, we can engage all the spiritual realms around us. We've practiced doing that. Meeting God here, meeting God on the inside, meeting God in the realms of heaven and other dimensions. So what we're going to do, we're just going to practice just trying to shift focus from where you are here to where you are there and where you are there to where you are here. Now remember, we separated soul and spirit and by faith you can engage, well, I want to be in two realms. So where did we go this afternoon? To your mountain, to your throne. Now, there's no reason why your spirit still isn't there. So make the assumption that by faith, my spirit is still on that throne in heaven, and I'm going to shift my consciousness here, which is at the moment looking at me. But when you close your eyes, you actually begin to shift from the problem solving, I'm analyzing this room and taking all the information from this room. My mind is analyzing it, turning it into an image so I can see it, to I'm going to relax and allow my mind and my imagination to begin to dial down so that it becomes to a place of rest so that then you can just think about that throne and engage it. So close your eyes. We know heaven's open. And if you've not think, well, I don't sure I'm there, well, then just step into it. You can still step into that realm whenever you want and engage with your soul and your spirit in that case. But in this case, okay, your spirit is on that throne. You're seated on that throne. Now start thinking about being on that throne again. So just shift from being here to your soul being there to join your spirit and be seated. You have a crown, you have a scepter, you have a mantle, you're seated on the throne. So just sort of recenter your thinking to be where you are on that throne in the realms of heaven. Now, while you're aware of being there, now just consciously shift your consciousness back to here so that you become aware of being here. You can keep your eyes closed. Or you can open them, it doesn't really matter. But now, be aware of being here, but you're connected to being there. Now Jesus is going to speak to your spirit there, but you're here in your consciousness. So whatever he says there has got to be transmitted to here so that you can hear him or sense what he's trying to communicate to you. So let Jesus say something to you and just see if you can tune in what he's saying from here to where your spirit is hearing that in that realm. Now just shift your consciousness from this realm back to where you're seated in that heavenly realm, on that throne, and become aware consciously of where you are there. Now just shift your consciousness back to here. Just think about being here and become aware of being here. Now while you're learning to practice this every day, you become more sensitive to being in both places, and that being in heaven, your spirit can flow through to you on the earth without you having to think about it, because you're expecting it. So heaven has solutions that earth doesn't, and those solutions will come to you from the place where you're sat on your throne, and your spirit can be framing your life minute by minute, bringing the kingdom, governing, engaging angels. You don't have to always be conscious of what your spirit is doing. You know, I sit and listen to people ask me questions every day. I never know what they're going to ask. But my spirit is already, I'm not dredging up the answers from my memory. I want it to be a fresh revelation that's coming out of heaven. And sometimes I hear myself saying things that I don't know. So I have a pad in front of me that I actually write down the things that then become conscious and aware of. And then I need to engage that, because that's going to open up a whole different realm. I didn't think that way before. Well, my spirit has received that and is imparting it because it's there and I'm here. Now, it's going to take a little bit of practice to develop that. And you have to persevere, and it may take a bit of time, but you become sensitive to be in a flow of heaven into the earth. And things from heaven begin to start manifesting around you much more easily, because you're connected to both realms at the same time. So it's just a little bit of practice, but I'd encourage you just to keep going with it. So my journey progressed from visions so that I could see into heaven and could see things, to going there and coming back there all the time until I was living there and living here. So all these experiences I had were involuntary to begin with in 95, 2008, 2010. They took me beyond the veil, but I didn't know how to go back. But when then I went back in 2010, Jesus showed me how to stay there and eventually how to live in both realms at the same time. So, you know, I was tutored, I was trained. The Holy Spirit engaged me, Jesus engaged me. Wisdom engaged me, the seven spirits of God engaged me. I wasn't having to learn it on my own. I got taught. I got shown how the court system of heaven worked. You know, it wasn't like all of a sudden I had a download and I understood everything. I went there. I was shown. I learned. I went back there. I learned a bit more. I observed. I went there. I started to do something in those places. So I was being trained in that way. So, you know, this process of learning, you know, servant, steward, friend, lord, king, son, co-heir, co-creator, and on. You know, it's a process. It takes time. I don't know how long your process will take. It depends where you started from. Remember, I started as far back as you could go. I couldn't hear. I couldn't see. I was left-brained, analytical, logical. I didn't believe in the Holy Spirit, you know, being in us to start with. I never even dreamed that any of this was possible. So if God can do it with me, which is why he chooses the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, because I wouldn't have chosen me if I was God. You know, I would think, well, there's people who are quite good at this stuff, they'll be easier. But actually, the way he chose me is because if I can do this now, there's hope for anybody. Seriously, because you might think, oh, it's easy for you. It really hasn't been. It took me 5 years to learn to hear the voice of God speaking to me in the Word of God and then outside of the Word of God. It took me another 2 years to learn how to see and experience and engage in. You know, the first time I did that, it was just awesome. You know, I'd learned to picture things and see things and visually engage, but then I wanted to engage deeper, so I was thinking about Jesus. I'd love to see Jesus talking to his disciples, and I'd love to listen in on the conversation. So I started to, I found a scripture, they were sitting on the hillside, and so I went and pictured that, and here's Jesus, he sat there, and so I go and sit with him, and then he looked at me, I mean, really looked at me straight in the eyes, and I thought, he can see me. No, I never really thought about it like that. That I was actually there, in whether it was a vision of being there, I don't know, but he saw me and he started to talk to me. And to start with, I was just, whoa, I was somewhat challenged by that, but then I learned that that was just the way it is. You engage in it, the door, the word becomes a doorway, your previous experiences become a doorway so you can go back into them. You use your imagination to open the door and you walk through. And then what happens, happens, and you continue to grow and mature in it. You know, so this spiritual realm, this atmosphere is filled with things. The angels, there are portals, there are other things. When you learn to see, you can begin to tune into the frequency of those things and they become information that you interpret. You know, the very first time I saw angels, you know, in the spiritual realm, again, I was shocked. I was trying, I was practicing. Closing my eyes. What can I see? Nothing. Nothing. And I was at the back of the room when our musicians were doing their sound check, which took ages. You know, as usual for musicians, they want to get it right. Fell back, turned me up. You know, I used to do the PA desk at times, and it's like, they say, oh, can you give me a bit of this, bit of that? I didn't touch it. Yeah. Yeah, it's better. It's just like, come on. Yeah, it's just like, so we bought a PA system that is controllable at their own fallback with their own little thing, and they can choose what's in it. Bliss. So for the sound man, it's bliss. No one can complain about their fallback because they're in charge of it. So I was there watching them, and I was just watching them, and I thought, I'm closing my eyes. I wonder if I can see them with my eyes closed. Black. Black. Then I closed my eyes, and I could see. I still saw them with my eyes closed. And I thought, whoa. So I opened my eyes, closed my eyes. I can still see them. What is this? How does this work? So I closed my eyes, and all of a sudden, I could see a whole lot of other things other than them. I saw all the angels and the things that were going on in the room. And I was like, whoa. And then I could see the atmosphere around people, and I could see the colors and the fragrances and their sound. I could see it in a way which interpreted something, and then I didn't know how to turn it off. So for a few weeks, I was overwhelmed by it. I just thought, oh, I don't want to see anything anymore. It's just like, oh, let me give you some peace. So I said to God, well, how do I turn this off? He said, well, stop engaging your spirit with it. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So now I can turn that off or turn that on. And I said, well, how do I describe how this works to people? He said, use sonar. You know, I used to watch war films with submarines, and, you know, you'd have, or, you know, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. You know, anyone remember Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea? Good one. Well, anyway, here's there and here's phones, you know, or it's Stingray. You know, a Stingray was a puppet thing we had in our country in the early 60s. But they had this guy on the phone stuff, and you send out a ping of sound in through the water, and then you record the echo of what it hits and sends it back. And it will determine how far that thing is from you, because water sound travels in a consistent distance through water and speed. Therefore, you can have this little screen and you go ping, ping, and you hear, you know, all the sound in the submarine. It's obviously sound effects makes it sound really cool. But you can see this big whale out there. You see it moving, you know, and if there's a big rock, you avoid it. So God said, well, send your spirit as a little ping to engage the atmosphere and see what gets reflected back. Then tune into what that is. So if you want to practice, it's easy. Practice with your own angels to start. We start talking to them. So I'm going to engage my spirit with the angels. Now, I can see all your angels. You know, no, I'm not describing them to you. Because you need to engage them for yourself. But I can see them. Most of you have got at least two. No, I'm not going to. Turn it off. I'll be tempted to start telling you, and I'm not going to. But you can learn. So every day when you get up in the morning, say, you know, welcome, Father. Thank you, Holy Spirit. You know, open your first love gate. Hi, angels. They're always behind you, generally, because they don't want to draw attention away from you and God. But they're there. So, hey, hi. What are your names? Can you tell me what you're called? How do I address you? Just whatever you feel led to do. And just close your eyes and become a little bit sensitive. Are they speaking to you? Are they giving you, are there thoughts? I mean, if you get an audible voice, I mean, that's pretty good. But generally, you get thoughts. Impressions in your mind of what that is. Yeah.
We can still ask questions, right? We can still ask questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I did that when I asked, I want to know my angel's name. Mm. And the answer actually came through 3 movies in a row.
Yeah.
And then a confirmation through a child. But she didn't say anything about angels. So I'm pretty sure the answer was right.
Mm.
But I tried to ask, there's been some other confirmations.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that? Is that happening?
Well, God will get through to any way he can.
So that was more God doing that than my angel, like manipulating.
Well, maybe. Maybe the angel was trying to communicate to you. If you learn to hear the voice of God consistently in conversation, it's easier to hear any other voices of angels.
Voice.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah, so it's just their thoughts, you know. Okay, I'm going to talk to my angels. I'm going to receive an impression of what they're saying or a thought of what they're saying. And then the more I do it, the more I get familiar with their voice and the more it's easier to communicate. So then, you know, then I send my angels on assignment. And, you know, sometimes they keep me out of trouble. You know, I mean, some people, you hear stories of people tripping and falling in front of a car and they're being yanked back and there's no one behind them. That will be your angel trying to keep you safe, because they're guardians there. They're there as ministering spirits on behalf of those who are heirs of salvation. So it's no problem communicating with them. They really want you to. It's just learning to tune in by practice. And then if you close your eyes and you say, I want to see what you're like, you know, so then begin to see what forms in your imagination. So you can usually see they've got a particular way they're dressed or they've got colours. You know, as I said, mine's a white winged horse and the other one's a warrior. You know, but I see other people's angels. Some of them are very feminine looking. Some of them, usually those associated with people who are worshippers at heart, they have particular angels that you can really sort of see. You know, some people have angels with spears. You know, it's just like, you know, some people have angels with bows. Well, that's usually those who are really praying for things at a distance or looking to engage things, because it's symbolic of who you're called to be and what you can do. You know, now it sounds all a little bit weird, but the reality is it's like everything spiritual is weird, isn't it? If you look at it from that perspective, it's in a realm that you can't see with your natural eyes. So, you know, a fiery sword spinning round with 2 cherubim who've got 4 faces and 6 wings is pretty weird. From our perspective, it's not normally what you see on the street corner or walking up the road, unless you learn to tune in and see in a spiritual realm. Then you'll start to see all sorts of things. Now, I'm not interested in the dark side of the force. You know, I'm just interested in what God's doing. If you focus on the dark side, they will take over what you see. I made a decision. I do not want to see, or nor am I interested in what the enemy's doing. Because I know if I focus on what God is doing, that will deal with anything that the enemy's doing. So some people say they see demons and see things. It's like, okay, I'm not interested in that. I will tune that out. And anyway, we don't have any demons in our meeting because they are left at the door, because we rule our atmosphere. We have no demonic manifestations because we don't want them. We don't want them distracting from what God's doing or what people are doing in worshiping God. Now, in a private setting, we will minister to people, and sometimes there are manifestations of deliverance. But most of the time now, because we've taught people to know their authority, deliverance is simple. It is not what it was. You know, 4 hours trying to get things out of people and them screaming and puking up in a bucket. I used to keep a bucket in my office because I had so many people puke over my carpet. I was fed up of getting it cleaned. So I kept a bucket in there. Yeah. But none of that happens now because we know our authority. And they know we know our authority. And we teach people to deliver themselves. You know, it didn't have to be a big histrionics and all. Because most of that is demons just playing up, trying to draw attention to themselves and keep you off focus. And, you know, I think some of the demons we delivered were the same ones over and over and over again. Because they were never really delivered in the first place. Because people never learned to live free. You know, just time-wasting. Keeping us going wherever, wherever around, decreasing circles until it was a waste of time. Now people are not manifesting things because they've learned to know their sonship. You know, not that I wouldn't deliver people if God said, but the way I would do it would be very different from what I used to do. So there are all sorts of the cloud of witnesses. You know, as I said, Esther's been here. There's been a few others observing what's been going on while we're here. Now, you know, you just learn to become sensitive to a change in the atmosphere. If something turned up or someone turned up, I would feel it generally, unless I was so focused on doing something else that I was distracted from the general perspective. But I would feel it. Then I would look to see. You know, when Esther turned up at our meetings, and she came to two or three of our meetings, and she's been around, followed me around a little bit when I've been going, and I am aware of her frequency. So when she appears, I know it's her. Just because I've experienced it a few times, therefore I'm now sensitive to that frequency, and I'm aware. And there are a number of other of the cloud of witnesses that are like that. So just become tuned, yeah.
Do you see her frequency, like
in colors? I feel it. Because if I close my eyes and I tune to it, then I would begin to engage it that way. But actually, I've learned to do most things with my eyes open. Because it's not dependent on what I'm seeing with my physical eyes or even the eyes of my heart, because my spiritual eyes, I now learn to discern what my spirit is showing me. So I'm more sensitive to it. But sometimes when I'm looking around, let's say I'm looking around the room now and I engage what is going on around the room in the spirit, I am sensitive to color and the frequency and fragrance that people give off. And, you know, I can describe it. So although it's not like I'm seeing it superimposed over you. If I close my eyes, then I could. But I know what is here because my spirit's engaged. You know, and therefore it's able to communicate, and I've learned to discern. Practice. Train your senses to discern by practice. Keep doing it and keep doing it, and you get better at it. But we all operate slightly differently. So some of you may have a more visual thing. But it doesn't really matter. The end of the day is actually knowing. You know, I perceive what it is. That's the key. Whether it becomes visual, sensory in any other way, or you just know, the point is that you know, whichever way you communicate. So just keep at it until it gets better. You know. So there are portals, you know, that open sometimes. You know, and that's why feathers drop down from the ceiling in some meetings, because portals open and angels come through and feathers get knocked off. And I think it's a little bit of a sign to point to something and a wonder that makes you wonder. That's what wonders are. I wonder what that is. Where is it pointing? Ooh, God. You know, the spiritual realm. Yes, just that's the way it is. You know, so I practiced until I could see. You know, and this whole spiritual sonar thing sort of made sense to me. So that's how I engage it. Now then I found I could travel in those realms. You know, so I learned to travel in the spirit. Now first of all, it was involuntary. God took me. And that is physical trance relocation. You know, the first time that happened to me, I was driving to a meeting. I was late. It wasn't a meeting that I needed to be there on time. It was with friend Lindy, and we were just meeting up for the day, and I was probably about half an hour late because I had a meeting and ran over. So I got in the car. I wasn't fretting. I wasn't concerned. I just drove normally. I drove around the corner, and I found myself somewhere else. I thought, I'm sure this isn't what's around that corner. I mean, I've driven around that corner I don't know how many times. This isn't it. Now, funnier enough, I was actually measuring or keeping a record of the mileage. And on the way back, I kept a record of the mileage, and it was 7 miles different. I didn't feel anything. I didn't sense anything other than, well, I seem to be somewhere else. But that was the test to me that God thinks, well, this is possible. This can happen. So a few weeks ago, I was driving my daughter to a train, to a train station, which was about 45 minutes away, about 35 miles or so. And I allowed 15 minutes traveling time, so we allowed an hour. We set off. We got 3 miles up the road, and there was this huge traffic jam. And it's like a tailback 5 miles long. So it's virtually, you know, I was just like, okay. My daughter was like, oh, no, we're going to miss the train. We're going to miss the train. We're going to miss the train. I said, calm down. It'll be okay. We'll be okay. And if you miss the train, I'll buy you another ticket. But we'll be okay. I can't afford to buy another ticket. You know, it's okay. We'll be okay. So eventually we got through this jam, and we had another 30-ish miles to go in 20 minutes on a road that had all these cars all going. So it was just like, okay, they're not going very fast. So I drove as fast as I could, but in peace. My daughter wasn't in so much peace as me, but I maintained, you know, an atmosphere of peace. And so we drove, and I didn't really notice the speed or the time, whatever, but we got to, I think, 7 miles of the place, and she looked at her watch and said, we've only got 3 minutes before the train goes. I said, okay, right, I need to do something else. So I just chose the reality that we would be there on time. It was just like, no, that's the reality that we're going to experience. Now, I can do that myself. When someone else is in the car with you with a negative thing, you've got to really rule over it. So I did, and we drove, and I don't know what she felt. I didn't feel particularly anything, but we got there with 2 minutes to spare. Now, there's no explanation for that, naturally. I didn't drive at 120 miles an hour, because I couldn't, even if I tried, because there was just so much traffic. But we got there. And I said, there you go, here's your train. And she was like, how did you do that? I said, I chose to. You know, as simple as that. I did, I chose to. I've done that with airplanes. I've done that where I needed to be somewhere to get a connection flight. Took off an hour late, hour and 20 minute flight. We're never going to get there. I chose to. We are going to get there. And I do it in different ways. In that time, I sent out an angel. I thought, oh, I'm going to do some sci-fi. I sent out my angel to create a warp field in front of the plane. You know, we took off that time. We were in the air. All the air stewardess and things, not looking at anyone, not wanting to make eye contact because everyone was annoyed, you know, because they were all going to miss their connecting flights. And so, you know, I was in just peace, no problem. Eventually, they start perking up and smiling and say, oh, we want to inform you of all the gates for your transfers to your flights. You know, because they looked at their watches and they realized that they were about to land when they should have been 3/4 of the way back. I don't know what they thought, but we got there on time. You know, now, you know, you have to rule. Don't be subject to circumstances when you're a son of God. Take authority over the circumstances and choose the reality that you want to see created and accept that reality. And you can do miracles like that. I was in Auckland I was just teaching in a session like this. There were a few people there who weren't believers yet. It was a Sikh lady, a couple of others. And I was talking about angels and supernatural engagements. And we got outside. It was raining really hard. And it ran over a little bit because there was questions and whatever. So I was the last one out. And I got out and all the cars in the car park were waiting at the gate because the caretaker had locked the gate. So it's like, okay. So I walked up to the front car who had these two ladies in. So I said, what's the problem? He said, well, the gate's locked. So they with a twinkle in their eye, they said, well, can you ask one of those angels to open it for us? And I thought, instantly I thought, no, I don't need to ask an angel. I'll open it for you. So I chose the reality that I would open the gate. So I walked up to the gate and I opened the padlock without a key. Now, they'd all tried and it wouldn't open. But I chose the reality where it would open. My choice as a son of God, because I didn't want them all queued up. I didn't want to get the caretaker out. I didn't want all the hassle. I wanted to go home and go to where I was staying and go to bed. So I chose that and I did it. Now, they were like, how did you do that? I said, well, I just chose to. And they smiled. They didn't know what to make of it. I said, well, I've been talking about supernatural stuff. Here's an example. Now, so you can do those things. So you can travel in those realms. Now, we're going to do an activation. Now, I had some real fun with this up in Winnipeg and some amazing testimonies afterwards. But if Philip could be trans-relocated, if Ian Clayton could be trans-relocated, you can. So you might not be physically trans-relocated. If you disappear, then we'll know where you've gone. But actually, your spirit can go. Because your spirit is not bound by Earth anymore, is it? Because you're untethered from it. So you're able to travel in space and time. Ooh, time travel? Well, the latest scientific thing is that consciousness can be traveled in time, not necessarily a physical body. So I have done this lots of times. When I'm available and I'm not thinking of anything else, usually in times of worship when I'm not responsible for anything, I say, hey, any adventures going? Anything you'd like me to do? Because there are people calling out on God all over the world, right at this second, asking him for help. There may be people calling out in time, asking for help. Now for him, remember, it's all now. When we engage him in the now, we have access to anywhere in time and space. So I have been used in time to minister to people and things. Did I change time? No, because I don't believe you can change time. But was I always used in time? Yes, but I only now became available because I stepped into the now of God to be available. First time it happened, I was just minding my own business, enjoying worship, and you know, I was like open, and I found myself back in 1756, I think it was, in some place in the middle of the US with a cabin isolated. And I'm standing there thinking, where is this? So I go and knock on the door. They open the door like they were expecting somebody. They go in, and there's a little child who basically is dying of some sort of pox or something. So they said, we've been calling out on God. So I said, I know, God sent me to answer your prayer. Now, they could have thought I was an angel, and there could be an angel who does that sort of thing. But actually, I did it. So I went in, ministered to the child. The child got instantly healed. They said, so grateful. I said, no problem. I walked out the door, and I was back where I was, aware of where I was. Yeah, I did the same thing in somewhere. I always seem to go into the US. I've been in Russia and China and various other things. But in the time ones, it's always been in the US in time ones. So I went into the now of God. I go back into 1824, some really posh house in the US, like gated mansion thing. Go in there. There's a whole load of family. They're all crying. Go up. there's a newborn baby and the mother's died. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'm sent here to do something about this. So I sort of, okay, what have I got a mandate to do? Raise her from the dead. So, oh, how do I do that? I've never done that before. Okay, what did Jesus do? What did I say? I remember a few, so I'm going to lie on her. So I lay over her, and I reached out to her spirit, went into the court of the upright, and called her back. I said, your time's not done. You need to come back with me. And often they don't want to come back, but this lady just had a child. So it wasn't that difficult to convince her. So I took her by the hand and pulled her spirit back into her body. I got off her and she woke up. They were like, oh. I said, well, you've been calling out on God. This is what God can do. Yeah. No, this wasn't a dream. I was awake.
So you went,
I was standing in worship.
And you came back.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where you were.
Yeah, my physical body.
How
full and I went soul and spirit. I didn't go in the spirit alone. I went soul and spirit. I was totally conscious of everything that was going on. Now, I do things like that in the spirit that I'm not conscious of, and people tell me that they've seen me in places and other places around the world. Because your spirit can manifest physically. Just like an angel can actually manifest physically, because it says be aware of hospitality, because you might be engaging with angels unawares, because they look like people when they engage physically. So I was touched. I touched. It was just like I was there physically, although I asked people in the meeting, did I physically disappear? And they said no, but we were aware that you seemed to be not there. You know, so I went there. And I came back and I said to God, what was that about? And he said, that lady is going to have another child who is going to be extremely significant in the kingdom of God. She wasn't done yet. Now, he didn't tell me who it was. And because I don't need to know, I didn't ask. I was ever so tempted to Google 1824 to find out who was born to see. But I didn't, because I'm much better now than I used to be. But all these things become possible. If you make yourself available, translation spiritually in time and space is possible, and actually it's more than that, it's probable, because God is answering people's prayers where there is no one physically to answer them. He used to send angels, but now more and more people are engaging in heaven and engaging in God. More and more people are getting to do this stuff. So we'll do an activation. Let's see where God takes you. Yeah.
Was it you? Remember the women had stripped naked, and was that you? You told that story.
Yeah.
Of your mentoring.
Yeah, no, I did. I mean, there's lots of applications to this. You know, it can be outworked in lots of different ways. What you can engage obviously in things generationally in your own family lines, which when you deal with something in the past actually has an effect in you in the future because you're free, but also on the effect of wherever they are. Because when you release forgiveness to your generational line, you also allow God to actually do something more in their lives. So that's another whole story. But it does, these things can happen. In Winnipeg, when I did this, I mean, I just had some awesome testimony. I was just like, wow. You know, and it was a simple thing. It was just like, okay, close your eyes. Some of you are still in heaven. Is your spirit? But again, just choose to ask Jesus. To take you on an adventure. Just make yourself available to him. Just set the desire of your heart. Say, here I am, Lord, send me. So you may be on your throne and Jesus will take you from there. You may just become conscious of being here, but we're just going to ask that Jesus would take you on an adventure through time or space to engage in helping someone somewhere else in the world or in time to answer the prayer or the cry of someone's heart. So just say to him, here am I, send me. and just allow him to take you wherever you go. If you're in the middle of something and still doing something, feel free to continue with that. You know, sometimes time in those things is different from here. In a few minutes, you can do things which are seem to be an expanded of what time is. Some people's like, did I just make that up? Did I just dream something? It can feel like a little bit like a dream sometimes. But don't overanalyze it. If something happened, great. If something didn't, your probably spirit was doing something that you've not just learned to tune in with your mind yet. And you'll find when your spirit's living in dual realms, you'll be on all sorts of adventures like that. People have talked to me and said, I talked to you last night in heaven. We had a conversation about this. I said, oh, that's interesting. What did I say? And virtually whatever they said, it'd be like, yeah, I know I would have said it like that. You know? So these things can happen. You know, don't stress if you didn't sort of think, but, you know, and they can happen in lots of things. I mean, in that encounter, I thought, oh, I'm available. I'll go and do something. So I went into the discovery room of heaven. I went into the discovery house and I found some schematics for a scientific principle. And then went back in time and deposited it in the head of someone who was meditating, looking for an answer to something.
Just think. Now?
Hmm?
Just now?
Yeah, just then. 3 weeks ago, I'm telling you that. 3 weeks ago, I was doing a hangout with the Washington group. And there was only a few of us there, because I think it was 4th of July or something, or some other people were doing stuff. So it was like, they ran out of questions. So I said, well, let's do something. Let's engage. So we did that. We basically said, hey, let's make ourselves available and let's go and then we'll feed back. And what happened? And each of us fed back. And although it wasn't exactly the same experiences, the experiences were related. You know, again, I went into the discovery house, found a plan of a map and went into a village in Africa, collected all the tribe's elders and showed them where a water source was, and then showed them how to irrigate their crops. I don't know where it was and whoever, but that's what you can do. You know, it's this way, way more. I mean, it's so fun. I mean, wouldn't it be fun to do these things? Think, well, why would God do that? Well, why would he send an angel? Why would he do anything? Because people are calling out on him and he wants to help them. He wants to demonstrate himself to them. He wants to show, hey, there is more to life than just the natural realm. So he will use us if we're available. You know?
Yeah. So, this is just a question. So you go, like you go back to the 1800s or something, where you were saying earlier. That's in that time. So you actually change what happens in that time? What happened in that time? Or is it...
Well, I didn't change it from the perspective of something happened and then it was different. I was always used in that time.
Right.
I'm only aware of it now because this is when I stepped into the now.
Oh, okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I'm only aware of what I've done now, but for them it happened in 1824 because I stepped into the now of God. Now God has used me in 1824, which is always 1824, but I'm only now aware of it. And I may not be aware of it if I'm doing it spiritually and not consciously. Because, I mean, think of how many people are crying out to God every second of every day. You know, I mean, you've seen that film Bruce Almighty. You know, and he has really good fun when he has all these powers. And then all of a sudden, the reality kicks in and he has all these voices in his head. Help, help, praying for this, praying for that. And he's like, I didn't sign up for this. This is what I'm like. Yeah.
So somebody 20 years from now could be affecting something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't believe that the future already exists from the perspective of it's already happened that way, but in time, it would only be now for them if they're in the now of God. They're doing it in 20 years' time, but actually 20 years' time doesn't exist yet. But in now, 20 years' time is still connected to now any time. And it works. I mean, a friend of mine, George Watkins, who's up in Washington State area, I don't know if you know George, but he's a great guy, and he's, I'm not how sure old he is, but he's been at this stuff for a long time, involved in the prophetic movement or whatever, and he's really tuned into these things. So he remembered, he was engaging God. He remembered when he was preaching many, many years ago, he cried out for God for help. And actually, he went back to help himself. Now, isn't that cool? Because he knew exactly what he needed, because he'd already experienced it. But now he went back and actually helped himself. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. But then he remembered how he felt when that happened, because he sensed help, but it wasn't like an angel appeared. He just felt he was strengthened and encouraged. So, you know, there's more things in heaven on earth, Horatio, which is a famous quote from...
Did you want us to share what we just seen, or is that what you're...
If you'd like to, there's no problem.
Well, I'd like to, because of just what you just shared, because I was found myself in a place all by myself, and I was just a little girl about four, but I didn't think it was me. I felt like I was found her, and she was lost, and she was really close to not making it. And I picked her up, and I just held her, and all of a sudden we just went through light, and now I'm in this train station where when I was a little girl of four, I was lost in there. And I thought, was that a dream about me, or was that me helping someone that was feeling like I did at that age when I was lost?
Well, it could be either.
I don't know. I mean,
it could be either. I mean, in the testimonies in Winnipeg, there were lots of rescuing people and helping people, particularly children and things. I mean, it was fascinating just to hear all these experiences, because it's like, this is fun. Hey, the Christian life does not have to be boring. You know, we have access to the spiritual realms and the realms of heaven. You know, this is supposed to be fun and enjoyable. And a little bit out there. You know, read some of the stuff in the Bible. There's Ezekiel sat by a river. And there God comes along and picks him up by a lock of his hair and takes him out of his body and then shows him Jerusalem and heaven and all sorts of stuff. Now, if anyone says, this is all wrong, well, there you go. There's a biblical proof text if you need one. These sorts of things happened. And if they happened then, why not now? We're just actually learning to be more consciously engaging it and involved. Yeah.
Well, that kind of makes me think of, now that you just said that, about taking by the hair, I think about the story of Jesus going to the pinnacle of the temple. How did that happen? Because the enemy was tormenting him. How did that happen? He was squished to the pinnacle of the temple.
Yeah, because he was taken in the spirit. And he was also shown all the kingdoms of the earth. He wasn't on some Mount Everest looking over physical kingdoms. He was taken into the atmosphere to see all the spheres of government, including yours and mine.
By the devil.
Yeah, because the devil has access to that realm. That's why we have a court of accusation and he can come and accuse people. So the devil was called the prince of the power of the air in that time, because Jesus had not yet defeated him on the cross and through the resurrection. So he had more power then than he's got now, because Jesus took back the keys of death and Hades. So he now has more authority, and he has given the authority that we gave to the devil back to us, because he took it back from him, overcame him, resurrected, brought us back into life, and has now given us the authority back. So this is why some of these things are possible, because we now have the authority that Adam had in the beginning, and he was able to do a few interesting things as well. You know, because he was able to engage. How do you think he was going to rule the whole earth from a little garden somewhere? He was able to see and move and engage. You know, and we're just rediscovering who we always were, who we always have been from God's perspective, but we're now understanding a little bit more of our sonship and the authority that we have in the kingdom. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, how people talking about people and that type of thing. So my question is can you, as a kingdom person, go and clean out those those negative words in the atmosphere, or do you have to leave them there? I mean, they do create, right?
Well, the fact that Jesus has overcome the enemy, he's given us the authority to continue to outwork that. And there's revelation that's been given that indicated a lot of these things. I mean, if you go back into the 70s, no one was talking about principalities, powers, and stuff like that. They're all talking about speaking in tongues and learning stuff. You know, and it was just like prophesying. And there was a restoration of things. But then you move on a little bit, and all of a sudden there was revelation about these things. And obviously the whole demonic thing. You know, now it got like, you know, there's a demon under every bush and everyone's blaming a demon. And it always swings too far. You know, but, and people saw, hey, there are things in the atmosphere that are affecting us on earth. They're called principalities and powers and rulers and, you know, wicked forces, which is the things that occupy those places. And so they discovered that. Now, what they didn't have the revelation was, is that they could be above that in heaven and have the authority to deal with it from above. And it was a big stepping stone. But of course, people tend to go overboard and it becomes everything.
Yeah.
Bind this, bind that, and everything's going to be okay. And, you know, there were things like the transformation videos at the time. You know, there weren't CDs at the time, there were videos. So we're going back a few years. But they had awesome stories of things that happened in various places around the world, you know, where things changed, where there was a place where there was a supernatural size, crops and carrots the size of, you know, things. I mean, all sorts of amazing things. The problem was that that became, everyone tried to do what those people did to get the same results, and that wasn't mandated for them. It's the danger of the Christian thing. Something happens, someone writes a book about it, someone reads the book, and then they try and do the same thing, thinking they have the same authority, getting disappointed that it didn't work, because that was the authority that was given the person who received the mandate. What he should have been saying is, I received this mandate to do this. Why don't you go and ask God to give you a mandate to do what he wants you to do? Rather than, here's the solution. Just do this. And some of the things were, they were doing things about dealing with the atmosphere. And then it became spiritual mapping. We need to find out everything that's going on in our communities. We'll find out all the Freemasonry. We'll find out all the witches' coverings. We'll do this. We'll map it all out. We'll see what was done in the past. Yeah. No. There's value to that. I'm not knocking it, because we did it, and I still have information about what we did then that now I can take in the realms of heaven and I can actually finish the job. Because I only did the stuff that was on earth, not the stuff which was above. And then we expected revival because we bound everything in the heavens. Then we're all waiting and disappointed because nothing really much happened. Sometimes things did happen. And then people attributed it to what they did. Then everyone else tried to copy what they did. And most of the time it didn't work. You know, I was, when sort of the Brownsville revival went on in Pensacola, you know, it's like lots of people, I went. Because someone said, they've got a transferable anointing there and you can go and you can bring that back. So I thought, oh, that sounds good. So four or five friends, we flew over. We stood in the line, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning. And then we actually discovered if you put a pastor badge on, you could get in free, straight away. Yeah, so, no, I would not call myself a pastor, but I was a church leader. So I did it without feeling any guilt or condemnation whatsoever. So we avoided the lines for the next week. And literally, I experienced amazing power. And the sense of the conviction of God to want to live a pure and holy life. And I was running to the front, like everyone else. Didn't know what I was running to the front. Most of the time, I was just, woo. And I remember someone praying for me, Lyndall Cooley it was. It was the worship, one of the worship leaders there. He put his hand on my stomach, and I literally flew in the air. I flew in the air about 15 feet. And I landed amongst a whole load of bodies in this little space with my feet in the air. And I felt his handprint on my stomach for 3 days. I felt it still there. It was that powerful. But when I went home, I didn't have that anointing because it was his and it was operating under what they were doing there, and everyone wanted Brownsvilles wherever they went. And most people got upset because they didn't happen. Because what you were supposed to learn was the principle. they cried out on God. And God did something there because of his heart reaching out to them, or whatever the reason was. Now, of course, they all messed it up because they all fell out, and as usual. And it ends up stopping, and you know, people look back, reminisce over what went on. And it was genuinely powerful, and people were genuinely set free, and they were genuinely engaged God for the first time, and people were drawn there. It was an awesome thing. But that doesn't mean that God wants to do that all over the world. It's a demonstration of what is possible. That nothing's impossible with God. And an impossible situation. The book was written when heavens are brass. Because John Kilpatrick was praying and crying out to God, and it seemed like heavens were brass. Like, in other words, no prayers are going anywhere. They're hitting the ceiling. And he described the cry of his heart, and he would go into the church sanctuary thing, and he would call out on God and call out on God. So it was as much to do with his desire and his passion and him not giving up, even when he felt the heavens were brass, that God answered those prayers. It was like sometimes the bowls of heaven get filled up and they get tipped out. Now, some of those things, I don't know why. I know the Hebridean revival in 1948, two old ladies, or actually relatives of Donald Trump, I think, from what I've heard, actually cried out on God and cried out on God, and they got into their in their barn and they got on their knees and they cried out on God and cried out, God, send a man of God, send a man of God. Remember, we need God. And then Duncan Campbell comes, and he comes into an atmosphere that you can't believe. And he didn't do anything. And I've heard him preaching. It was pretty dire. It was boring, to say the least. Then, to be honest, I didn't find Steve Hill that inspiring either, but some of the times in Brownsville, because it was nothing to do with what they were doing or saying. It was God was doing something, and they were just there and available, and he used them. Didn't validate that style of preaching. It didn't validate that sort of church. None of that is what it's about. It's about actually engaging God and experiencing what God did. But actually, we need to go beyond why did he do it and what can we learn from it. We had a move of God in 2011, which lasted 3 months. We did meetings every night. And I had hundreds and hundreds of people came from all over, traveled. Some of them were traveling 3 or 4 hours every night just to come. Because it was powerful. You know, it was a really powerful time. And there were people getting baptized in the Spirit, people getting physically healed, people getting mentally healed, people getting set free, people giving visions and dreams, engaging heaven, all sorts of stuff was going on. I recorded them all. I've got a whole list of every testimony that went on, and there were hundreds of them. And it was awesome. And what God was showing us, look what's possible. Because we were like, how can a few of us manage to keep a meeting going? Poor musicians were like every night. Yeah. Well, they learned to be strong and draw on God rather than just their own strength. Yeah, so we did for three. And then God said, I want you to stop the meetings on this day. So I'm like, okay, we'll stop the meetings on that day. And then God said, it ain't going to be like this, you know. So I thought, no, I hope it isn't. I don't want to be doing something every night. However good it is, because that's not real life. And that takes the emphasis on, we're responsible every day of our lives to be Jesus to people and demonstrate a supernatural lifestyle and bring heaven to earth and be a gateway of heaven. That's all our responsibility. You know, we can't sit back and say, oh God, will you save everybody? Well, he already has saved everybody, and they just don't know it, really. The reality is he's done everything necessary for salvation on the cross. There's nothing else you can add to that. People just need to be awakened to realize what he's done for them, that he's forgiven them, so they can experience forgiveness. But we're responsible. We have the message of reconciliation. We're the ambassadors. And if we're sitting back waiting for everyone else to do it, or for God to do it sovereignly, nothing much is going to happen. I want to see a harvest, but I'm not expecting a harvest to come through the revival things that's happened in the past. And yeah, there are awesome things. Cane Ridge Revival, you know, in the US. Amazing. I mean, I love reading about it. I read God's Generals and all the books about the revivals. I mean, I want to know what God has done. But I'm not expecting him to do the same thing, because he told me he's not going to. It's through us. Every day, being a light and drawing people to the light. because we're now the light of the world. We can't look for a formula. I know everyone would like a formula, because it's easy, isn't it? A, B, C, here's a wonderful result, awesome. He didn't like that. That's not relational. That doesn't mean you have to hear God and depend on him and seek him for things. That means you can push a button and you get a microwave meal. It really doesn't work like that. And we need to get away from that. We're involved. So if we want to see our community transformed, let's start taking authority in the heavens. Let's start establishing something on earth that demonstrates heaven. And then we can clear the atmosphere. Then we can start seeking a strategy for what God tells us to do. And then don't try and export it to someone else. Because someone else will be disappointed if they try and do what you do, because you were supposed to do that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to practice to train to see clearly. Generally, people get impressions or sense these things or get sort of outlined sometimes. But you know what's going on, but it may not be a Hollywood production. You know, if it's an involuntary encounter where you're taken off in a trance, usually it very much is. It's like life is suspended, I'm there. This is reality, whatever was before. But when you're first starting, you've got to learn to hear, you've got to learn to perceive in the way that you do. And don't get upset if you don't get everything all in one go. Just keep at it. As I said, it took me about 5 years to learn to hear God speak to me. I just don't give up. You know, some people give up too soon. The breakthrough might just be around the corner. You know, I remember Ed Silvosa telling the story of, you know, looking to see cities taken for God. And he said, when you pray, it's like, you know, it's like prayer is like a hammer and you're hitting a wall. And you hit it once and you hit it twice and nothing seems to happen. You hit it again and you hit it again and you hit it again and you hit it again. And it's like, here, 39 times you hit it. And then you think, oh, I fed up with this. The 40th time it would have come down. But you gave up. Sometimes you can't even see what you're doing. Then a little crack appears. And all of a sudden, the next thing, bang, everything comes down. We've got to learn to be perseverant. You know, be diligent, persevere. Don't think it's going to come like magic. Sometimes we have blockages. Sometimes we may have things in our imagination that cause us to fear. Therefore, we're afraid of opening that door because maybe something's happened, or maybe we had night terrors, or maybe when we... All those things can be contributory to us not seeing very clearly, or perhaps being a little bit afraid of pursuing this, for what won't we see, or I don't want to be led astray, you know. You know, it's like, don't fear the enemy. God is more powerful to keep you safe than the enemy is to harm you. But it does take a little bit of time. Yeah.
If I see, I guess I'll share, but each time that I'm engaging, I see a glimpse of a dragon in the sky, and then it goes away. And it's not that I'm scared of it, but it appears every time.
Okay, well, if you're seeing that, there's an indication that that is what's trying to stop you seeing. So, a dragon, okay? There can be dragons in this spiritual realm. I mean, you know, when I know Ian Clayton talks about this, some mountains, some volcanoes and stuff seem to have dragons attached to them. Think of it as a spiritual entity. You know, a demon, what is a demon like? What's a fallen angel like? Well, they're sort of described as dragons in a sense. So it's a sign that the enemy is doing something around your life to try and block your identity, your authority, trying to remove that. So it can create every time I try and see, because that's trying to stop you seeing. So when you see that, you'll probably take your eyes off what you're looking at and you get distracted, because that's why it's disappearing. If it stayed there in the vision, you could go and deal with it. But it's coming and it's going. Which is like hit and run. It's like guerrilla tactics. It's like hit and run. You can't catch me, but I'm going to disrupt you. And now you're seeing this, and then you're taking your eyes off what God wants you to see because you're focused on it. It's just a tactic of the enemy. I would, if you know how to do a court case, or ask one of the guys here how to do a court case, go to court, ask to see what the accuser says that gives this a legal right to do that. Because there will be a legal right. It won't just be able to do that without some reason. It may not be something you've done. It may be something generationally that's happened in the past, and these things are able to do that, or attached to our generational line. But it may be. It may be something you saw as a kid, or it may be some sort of fear that once happened, and you may not even remember it, but the memory could come back, and then you can deal with it. Because God will give you the authority then to dismiss it. You know, because you have the authority to say, get lost. Yeah, you're not interrupting my time with God anymore. And if it then manifests to deal with, you know, it may be that will get rid of it because it's just trying to afflict you. If it's something that you have to deal with, then what you do is get the verdict. That becomes the sword of the Spirit. Then you go and chop its head off. With that verdict that says, I have authority over you. You have no right to afflict me. I am going to deal with you. And then when you split open its belly, out will come all the things it's been robbing you of, which is awesome when you get it all back. You know, but don't preempt what it might be. Just seek God or engage a court to find out what the accusation is. Deal with that. Then you can do it. And in a sense, the good thing to do, even before you go into any sort of encounter, just consciously say, I'm going to take authority of every hindrance that's trying to block me here, and I'm going to forbid you to attack me. You know, and at that, you know, then you'll start to see that you'll probably rile it up, or you'll probably bring it into the light, or it will stop. Because sometimes these things just do it until, because they know you don't know what they are or how to deal with it, so they just, hey, I can do this whenever I like. But, you know, everything that the enemy does is to rob, kill, and destroy. So he's just trying to rob you of intimacy with God and your ability to be able to engage and see. You know, but don't be worried about it, because you have more authority than any dragon. You just have to find where that is, get the word that gives you that authority, which is a verdict if you do a court case. Sometimes God gives you a scripture and you just know, I have authority, this is my sword. But without obviously, you know, taking you through a court case, you know, I don't know. But I would suggest that you find out why it's there. You know. Okay. I think we'll leave it there. I think that's sort of a good place to stop. Please take some of the stuff. Please go away and practice. Yes. Just keep at it. Don't give up. Don't get discouraged. If you practice, you will be able to do all the things I do and beyond.